The Old Testament reading for the fifth midweek Lenten Vespers is from Jeremiah chapter 31. Behold, the days are coming, declares the Lord, when I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and the house of Judah, not like the covenant that I made with their fathers on the day when I took them by the hand to bring them out of the land of Egypt, my covenant that they broke, though I was their husband, declares the Lord. But this is the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel after those days, declares the Lord. I will put my law within them, and I will write it on their hearts, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people. And no longer shall each one teach his neighbor and each his brother, saying, Know the Lord, for they shall all know me, from the least of them to the greatest, declares the Lord. For I will forgive their iniquity, and I will remember their sin no more. O Lord, have mercy upon us. The epistle is from Hebrews chapter 5. Every high priest chosen from among men is appointed to act on behalf of men in relation to God, to offer gifts and sacrifices for sins. He can deal gently with the ignorant and wayward, since he himself is beset with weakness. Because of this, he is obligated to offer sacrifice for his own sins, just as he does for those of the people. And no one takes this honor for himself, but only when called by God, just as Aaron was. So also Christ did not exalt himself to be made a high priest, but was appointed by him who said to him, You are my son, today I've begotten you. And as he says also in another place, You are a priest forever, after the order of Melchizedek. In the days of his flesh, Jesus offered up prayers and supplications with loud cries and tears to him who was able to save him from death, and he was heard because of his reverence. Although he was a son, he learned obedience through what he suffered, and being made perfect, he became the source of eternal salvation to all who obey him, being designated by God a high priest after the order of Melchizedek. O Lord, have mercy upon us. The Holy Gospel according to St. Mark, the 10th chapter. You may rise. And they were on the road going up to Jerusalem, and Jesus was walking ahead of them. And they were amazed, and those who followed were afraid. And taking the 12 again, he began to tell them what was to happen to him, saying, See, we are going up to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man will be delivered over to the chief priests and the scribes, and they will condemn him to death, and deliver him over to the Gentiles. And they will mock him and spit on him and flog him and kill him. And after 3 days, he will rise. And James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came up to Jesus and said to him, Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask of you. And he said to them, What do you want me to do for you? And they said to him, Grant us to sit, one at your right hand and one at your left, in your glory. Jesus said to them, You do not know what you are asking. Are you able to drink the cup that I drink, or to be baptized with the baptism with which I am baptized? And they said to him, We are able. And Jesus said to them, The cup that I drink, you will drink, and the baptism with which I am baptized, you will be baptized. But to sit at my right hand or at my left is not mine to grant, but it is for those for whom it has been prepared. And when the 10 heard it, they began to be indignant at James and John. And Jesus called to them and said to them, You know that those who are considered rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great ones exercise authority over them. But it shall not be so among you. But whoever would be great among you must be your servant, and whoever would be first among you must be slave of all. For even the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many. O Lord, have mercy upon us. Our sermon text today is the gospel lesson just read, Mark 10, 32 to 45. And the title of the sermon is Inheriting the Kingdom of Heaven. Although our gospel lesson this evening does not use the word inheritance, that is the primary theme and the issue at stake. James and John, the sons of Zebedee, asked Jesus if they could sit at his right hand and left hand when he ruled his future kingdom. Matthew reports in Matthew 20, 20 to 21, that their mother made this request of Jesus. Probably all three were involved, James, John, and their mother. When the other apostles heard about this, they were enraged. I can imagine Peter shouting out, "What's this? I thought we were all in this together. I thought we were all going to get our fair share. What are you guys trying to do? Cut us out and take our shares for yourself?" Now, what does sitting at Jesus' right and left hand have to do with inheritance? In the culture of those days, kings ruled with their vice regents seated at their side. Normally, the vice regent would be the crown prince, who was the legal heir to the throne. The prince was at the king's side in the throne room to hear discussions and to hear agreements and treaties that were made. If the king fell ill or died, the prince would have to take over the business of governing. The prince's position in the throne room thus served the practical concern of continuity of business and the symbolic concern of indicating to everyone who is next in line to rule. Not too many days previous to our text, the apostles had heard Peter's confession, "You are the Christ, the Son of God." Now, the disciples all thought that this meant that Jesus was the prince anointed to restore the political throne of David. They thought that this meant then that Jesus would soon cast out the Romans and the Herods from Israel and restore the dynasty of David. They thought that Jesus soon would be putting on royal robes, be seated in Herod's palace with his apostolic viziers, and all nations would then come to him, just as the Old Testament promised. The disciples all knew that Jesus was not married, he was not betrothed, and was not interested in marrying. Therefore, he was not going to have an heir before he died. You need a wife or a queen to do that. So this meant that the business of who was next in line was urgent, and it better be determined before Jesus rose to power. By asking to be seated at Jesus' left and right hand, James and John were elevating themselves above the other apostles. They wanted to inherit the kingdom of David after Jesus was deceased. The importance of inheritance, of political authority, also known as succession, is demonstrated in the case of the Islamic religion. When Muhammad died, no definite provision had been made for any successor to lead the new community. There were two ideas about leadership in Arabia at that time. One thought that a person of high quality, we would say competence, should become the leader. The other thought that leadership was hereditary or dynastic. Those who agreed with the idea of high quality chose Abu Bakr as their Khalifa, which means leader, and from which we get the word caliph today. Those who agreed with the hereditary idea followed Muhammad's closest blood relative, his son-in-law, Ali. This became an irresolvable split in Islam, and it still divides that religion today. Those who followed Abu became known as the Sunni Muslims, while those who followed Ali became known as the Shia Muslims. And you know, in the Middle East, they often get into wars against each other. Jesus' response to James and John in verse 38 was, "You guys have no idea what you're talking about." Now, it is true that Jesus was like Muhammad in starting a new religion. But unlike Muhammad, Jesus had absolutely no intention of starting a political regime. Jesus confessed before the Roman procurator, Pontius Pilate, for all the world to hear. It's his official position. "My kingdom is not of this world." John 18:36. That's it. This meant that there would be no running out the Romans or the Herods from Israel. "My kingdom's not of this world." Jesus would not take up residence in Herod's palace. There would be no special seats or meals for the apostolic viziers in the throne room. This does not mean, however, that Jesus was not going to receive a kingdom. He was going to inherit the most comprehensive kingdom of all, that is, rule over all humans, both the living and the dead. Now, any kingdom has certain rituals which its king must follow when he is inaugurated. For the kings or queens of England, these ceremonies last the greater part of a day. One of these is drinking from the royal cup. Most temples have certain rituals which their priests must follow when they are inducted into office. One of these for the Jewish priests was ritual bathing. So, in our gospel, when Jesus talked about the cup that I drink and the baptism with which I am baptized, he is talking about the rituals of his being inducted into his priestly / royal kingdom. Do you know when Jesus drank that cup and was baptized? What did Jesus pray to his Father in the Garden of Gethsemane? He prayed, "Father, everything is possible for you. Take this cup from me. Yet not what I will, but you will." Mark 14:36. So this tells us that the ritual induction of Jesus into his kingdom, his drinking the cup and being baptized, was his suffering, torture, and death. Jesus then asked James and John in our text, "Are you able to drink this cup and be baptized in this way?" Not knowing what they were saying, James and John replied, "We are able." And then Jesus replied, "You will drink this cup, and you will be baptized in this way." And this was a prediction of the sufferings, torture, and death of all the apostles. James, as it happens, was the first to go, as Acts 12, verse 2 reports, when he was executed by Herod. John, as it turns out, was the last to go. Although he died a natural death in his 90s, John was boiled alive during the persecution of Domitian, and he survived, and then was exiled for years on the island of Patmos. Jesus put an end to the Zebedee's brothers' requests when he told James and John, "To sit at my right hand or at my left is not mine to grant, but it is those for whom it has been prepared." That's verse 40. Thrones. Those for whom it has been prepared. There is something in the Bible, the very end, that looks at that, that gives us a vision. It's the vision of John in the book of Revelation, where he saw, quote, a throne in heaven with someone sitting on it. And surrounding the throne were 24 other thrones, and seated on them were 24 elders. They were dressed in white and had crowns of gold on their heads. That's Revelation chapter 4, verses 2 and 4. And that vision is more like the Knights of the Round Table than a king seated with his crown prince. Each one of those elders, and they may include the apostles, is the other's equal in honor, dignity, and authority. Our Lutheran confessions take up this matter when they talk about the authority of the Pope over against the other bishops of the Church. The Treatise on the Power and Primacy of the Pope states, and I quote, in Luke 22, 24 to 27, Christ expressly forbids lordship among the apostles. For this was the very question the disciples were disputing. Who was to be the leader and, as it were, the vicar of Christ? Christ reproved the apostles for this error and taught them that no one should have lordship or superiority among them, but that the apostles should be sent forth as equals and exercise the ministry of the gospel in common. That's section 7 to 8 of the treatise. Today's gospel lesson is the primary reason that the Lutheran Church does not recognize the superior authority of the Bishop of Rome, whom we call the Pope. We accept his role as the Bishop of Rome, but not as the superior bishop over all pastors and congregations in the world. Following Jesus' commands in our text, Lutherans have what is called a collegial view, not an episcopal or monarchical view of ministry and church leadership. Lutherans take literally Jesus' words in verses 42 to 44. Our pastors are not rulers, and we do not exercise authority over temporal things, but they are servants and ministers of all who will accept the word, the sacraments, and the gospel. May you, in the same way, serve one another as Christ has served you until he returns to claim his kingdom of glory. In Jesus' name, amen.